Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Morning.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
All right, bud. How are you?
I'm good. I actually feel better for the first time in like 2 weeks.
Nice.
Hey, Gaddy, did you not get sick after our band tour?
I think I'm still sick.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Thank you for wandering in. Thank you for visiting our lovely video store here.
I mean, I also wandered in.
Yeah, you wandered in. Although you've got to get behind the counter now. You've got some work to do. This is going to be a nice little chat. We've got ourselves a G-Force.
Hello.
He was an editor
and
the producer of the show. We're not working behind the counter. We've got ourselves a Gaddy.
Hey, Rusky.
Who makes his own candy. His company is called the Gaddles Candy Company, but he also plays in the band Short Straw with me. And about 2 weeks ago, we did something that we used to do in our sleep every weekend. But we don't do as much of it anymore, which is play a weekend of shows in a faraway city.
Right.
We went to Cape Town and came back, and I promptly got sick.
Yeah, I was like, Monday was a total write-off. Tuesday, I was like, okay, I'm not doing this. And then I realized I had to go to a conference for Gaddles and meet the Turkish delegate.
Okay.
So I was like, because they called me and they're like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm on the way.
Boy.
You're in this room with hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense. This is why you get sick.
Yes.
And for years and years as a band, we would always get sick after tour.
Right.
And you then just build up this amazing immunity.
Yeah.
I had an ex that used to be a nursery school teacher.
Right.
And they also like, first 2 years, you're going to get fucking sick the whole time. And then your body just gets used to it.
Yeah.
Well, it's that, and then the airport, and then the aeroplane.
Yeah,
sure.
One mask.
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
My name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope,
yeah,
which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And this is the video store.
Yeah.
We like to kick things off, because we haven't seen each other in a little while, with something we call, Hey, Did You Guys See?
Mm.
Should I start?
Sure.
Hey, Did You Guys See? It Was Just an Accident, won the Palme d'Or. We've just finished the Cannes Film Festival. It happens every year in May.
Mm-hmm.
And the big prize, amongst many, is the Palme d'Or.
Yes.
Last year, it was a Nora, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
Yeah. So often this is a nice sign of what great, very much art house films are going to come our way. The economics of a film festival, especially the ones in competition at something illustrious as Cannes, tend to be premieres.
Yeah.
And they tend to throw their weight around and make sure that these films don't premiere anywhere else so that they start in Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is usually the start of a film's life.
Yeah.
And if it picks up a laurel like the Palme d'Or, then guys can add an extra zero to sales agents when they try and get distributors around the world. So it's a lovely like economic builder.
Mm.
Something that's interesting about Cannes is that there's the flashy tuxedo competition, which the world sees, but in that big complex, underneath it is four floors of film market.
Yes.
And that's really what makes Cannes.
Yeah.
Is that all the industry folks, I know a few guys in the South African industries, the guys I deal with as a cinema, the distributors, a lot of them were at Cannes last week so that they can be buying and negotiating and cool, picking up these films. So it's
so a lot of the deals like literally get signed there on the spot.
Totally. Yeah, totally. The first thing you would want as a film is to perhaps, if you're going to do the full sort of chain, it could change and some could skip. But you would get a sales agent first, and that sales agent would then shop you around to different distributors, distributors would then distribute to exhibitors.
Now, these sales, sorry, there's a lot of questions about Candy.
No, no.
But do the sales like happen after the movie's screen and once people've seen them, or do some sales happen even before?
Sure, I think it's a combination. Mm. And they also happen in these cool places, like, you know, in the market, which look like a conference. But yeah, sometimes these sexier distribution companies rent out apartments.
Yes,
in that strip. Mm. So when we were doing a little bit of it, because I've only ever done one trip to Cannes, and it was a long time ago, but I can't imagine too much has changed. You got to go into these apartment blocks and go up and down the stairs and into this kind of really fancy apartment.
Right,
and that'll be the Memento, you know, office or MK2 or Vertigo and like all these cool companies. And of course nowadays that's Neon,
yes,
and A24 and all these cool companies that are distributors. Mm. Speaking of which, Neon released this film.
Okay.
And this makes Neon they've set this record. They have won 6 Palme d'Ors in a row.
Yeah, see.
Oh wow.
Which that's is amazing. Wild. So like Anora, Parasite.
Yeah.
Titane, Anatomy of a Fall.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yes, see.
So yeah, it's the 6th win for Neon in a row.
Sick.
I want to foreshadow, there's a film called Life of Chuck, which I really want to talk about today.
Okay, yeah.
And that is a Neon film.
Right.
That's coming to cinemas in like 2 weeks.
Cool.
Has Neon never been used as a production company? It just seems perfect.
Yeah, it does, right? So that happened. I don't know anything about it. Was just an accident. Mm. Every now and again, these films can be these tiny little films.
What language is it?
I don't fucking know. Sorry, can someone Google it? It looks Middle Eastern.
Okay.
What's it? An accident?
It was just an accident.
Just an accident. Wow.
It's okay. It's got a Palestinian looking,
right,
Middle Eastern look to it.
Iran.
Mm. There we go.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Co-production between France, Iran, and Luxembourg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Luxembourg's interesting. I had a friend who lived in Luxembourg. It's one of those tiny little tax haven countries.
Yeah.
But there is a language called Luxembourgish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
So she had to learn Luxembourgish.
Why not?
To get her citizenship. Yeah. But okay. It's really, and it's so funny because you think you're on the other side of the world. She's like, my apartment is full of Afrikaans people. Funny, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, G-Force.
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Caught Stealing?
Mm.
This is Darren Aronofsky's new film.
Yes, that was one of mine.
Yes.
Oh, I watched it this morning, yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. It's very different for Darren Aronofsky.
It does. It looks a bit fun.
Yeah,
in a way.
It looks like a bit of a comedy, which is very odd for him.
So Aronofsky really made a big name for himself with Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
Went on to make a lot of other very serious stuff.
Black Swan,
I think Mother's,
The Whale,
Mother's is best. And I know this is most divisive movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen Mother.
Mm, neither have I.
I
can't kind of bring myself to watch Mother. I don't know why.
Did you listen to the Marc Maron interview with Aronofsky?
No.
Because in the interview he says how he only watched an hour before Aronofsky was able, or up to the last half an hour before he was able to have the interview. And Aronofsky was like so cross with him.
Because you need to see more.
Because this movie just builds. It's like one of those movies you can't like move your eyes for a second.
Right.
And it's just like the anxiety just builds. Oh, it's a great movie.
There was this amazing post I saw in our little film meme world where someone was like, 2024... Wait, what are we in? 2025.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm that old. 2025 is actually an incredible year because we're going to get a film from, and it listed all these incredible filmmakers,
okay,
including Aronofsky, Celine Song. There's a new Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
You know, the list is incredible. But yeah, Caught Stealing is one of them. It looks like it's set in the 1990s.
Yeah, it looks like 90s New York.
In a sort of perhaps like pre-Giuliani cleanup New York. Austin Butler, handsome man.
A very handsome man.
Looks like he's caught up in things like every Austin Butler film,
yes,
where he just seems to get fucked up by everyone else. He just seems to get beaten up because he's so pretty.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz looks very cool in it. And Matt Smith. It looks like there's like some real like steamy moments between him and Zoe Kravitz, like the trailer links to it. But yeah, I think it will be cool because Aronofsky is an incredible filmmaker.
Yeah.
And here is something not necessarily lighter, but something that isn't as serious as Requiem for a Dream or The Whale.
It actually looks like fun.
It looks quite
fun. His movies usually aren't fun.
You know, you always hear about these cancelled movies or movies that were in development. He was supposed to do RoboCop remake, and that never got made. Like, that would have been so
That would have been nuts.
Interesting. Yeah. So it is dated for South Africa, the 29th of August.
Okay.
Which feels like it's far away, but it's really not.
No.
Oh, God. I still can't wrap my head around the fact that it's fucking June.
Yeah.
In my head, it still feels like March.
Yes.
It's weird. Ugh. Like, April was such a weird blip for me because of all those public holidays.
Yes.
We took some trips, and I was losing my mind as to, like, what day it was. So I feel like I lost April. Gaddy, have you got any? Hey, did you guys see?
Hey, did you guys see the new trailer for what is this? The 57th Jurassic Park movie?
I actually didn't watch the latest trailer. I don't want to see any more trailers for it.
I don't think I saw the other trailer.
Okay,
but like I forgot watching this that it's Gareth Edwards, who's one of my faves.
It's Gareth Edwards
and David Koop.
Yeah, who wrote the first one.
Yeah,
David
They have shot it on film cameras.
Yeah.
Because they are trying their best to take it back to a more original, authentic Jurassic World, which is kind of tough after like six movies.
Yeah.
So we're in the Jurassic World.
I think it's the fourth
story.
Fourth movie in that.
And this is called
Jurassic
Dominion.
Rebirth. Yeah.
What's
Dominion.
Super interesting about this. Is I just so happened to mention it to Jess, and she's like, oh yeah, I saw that trailer. I'd want to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And Jess doesn't want to watch anything.
Yeah.
So there are places that like track these things of like saying, hey, what are people's most anticipated movies? The Jurassic Park has constantly been number one the whole year for like the most anticipated movie of the year.
Really? Yeah. Because I'm personally debating whether or not it's a Bioscope thing.
Oh, right.
And I just don't know.
Yeah.
I told Leslie, speaking of our conversations with partners, I was like, I think it's almost an unspoken rule that the Bioscope is never going to screen a movie where someone's secretly an assassin.
Right.
It's like, I just don't fucking like those movies. It's personal.
Yeah.
Because this last weekend we've just had now was Mission Impossible weekend, where it probably made a fucking bomb.
Yeah,
like,
we can, a ton
of money.
We can get to that.
And the Bioscope did not participate because I've got this, like, it's not a steadfast rule, but it's just a little bit silly, right?
Yes.
So I don't know whether I'm in that camp.
Maybe
the
time like Jurassic Park screenings around that time rather than Jurassic
World. And it was the same with Mission Impossible. We could have perhaps done the first one as a classic movie.
That would have been
cool. Like Westworld.
Just
go against
Michael
the
Crichton.
Is that also a Michael Crichton book?
He directed the movie as well.
Oh, the original Yul Brynner one.
Mm-hmm. That was Michael Crichton.
Shit. It does look cool. It's got old ScarJo.
Yeah.
I forgot she was in it, and I didn't even recognize her at the end. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was her.
That last one was dog shit.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was not a dinosaur movie. It was a fucking locust movie.
Yes.
I don't think I even saw the last one.
No, it was bullshit, man.
Yeah. But the reason they're still calling this Jurassic World instead of Jurassic Park is because it's still, despite the fact that it was garbage, it still made $1 billion.
Oh, yeah.
All of those Jurassic World movies have made more than $1 billion.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
No, okay. Well, I think we should maybe consider it.
Mm.
Okay.
All right.
I got another one. Cool. Hey, did you guys see the teaser trailer for Zootopia 2?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
So you know what it reminded me of in that first episode of the studio when they show on the laptop to the studio head that ridiculous Kool-Aid teaser?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not even like a joke. That's just what I just watched right now.
Okay, is that what this Zootopia 2 looks like?
Yeah, because it starts like someone plays a note on the piano and everyone's just dancing, and then there's more dancing, and then there's like absolutely no plot.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you anything about the movie.
It's what it says on the box.
I know, but it's just, it's beyond parody at this point.
I just love someone once broke it open. They were like, what happens if animals were people? What happens if cars were people?
Yeah.
What happens if emotions were people?
Yes.
What happens if elements were people? It's like, okay, yeah. Like what's left?
Yes.
I still am a little confused about why they went with a different title out of America. So it's Zootopia or Zootropolis?
Yeah, Zootopia, and then depending on where it is in the world, it's Zootropolis, yeah. I think it must be like a branding thing, like Zootopia must be a brand that already exists in some parts of the world.
Well, I just think that
has a trademark.
Possibly, or just they didn't think people would get the idea of a utopia outside of America.
Right.
Because only Americans are great enough to conceptualize that.
I think usually when that sort of thing happens, it's because that like that name is owned already by something else and they can't trademark it.
The weirdest one that happened, Silverman?
Silverman.
Saving Silverman became Evil Woman?
Yeah, we got it as Evil Woman.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then the other one, which I had a fat debate with an American over, was Encino Man.
Yes.
We knew it as California Man. Because we don't fucking know what Encino
that
is.
That makes exactly sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes loads of sense.
Yes.
Okay, I got one. Mm-hmm. Hey, did you guys see there's a TV show coming out called All's Fair?
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to be on Disney Plus. I don't think we're going to run out and watch it ourselves personally, but I think it's interesting because it is Kim Kardashian's acting debut for a narrative show.
Right.
But it looks like it's stacked with a little bit more. There's like Glenn Close, Sarah Paulson, and it's all set around a female law firm, which we sometimes forget that Kim Kardashian's dad was a very famous lawyer and represented O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson, yep.
It's pretty well known, but I mean, it's something we forget.
South Park popularized that.
Sure. And we got a reminder when David Schwimmer played him in the in that one
that series.
Series.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. She has done law. She has tried to kind of follow somewhat in her father's footsteps.
Yeah.
She famously pushed for certain kind of law reforms in America in real life.
Is this straight up fiction though? This
what I've just said now isn't. That's what Kim Kardashian has done in real life. But this is now a narrative show. She is like acting as a character.
Okay. Right.
Which I think is interesting.
Well, good luck.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
Cool.
Okay, pertinent to a conversation we had over the weekend, well, like an exchange, you were asking if you should screen Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, that's another debate.
Hey, did you see Lilo and Stitch made $340 million this weekend?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I said to you, Stitch is stupidly popular as a character. There's Stitch merch everywhere.
Is it smart?
I have no idea.
Have we watched the first one?
Yeah, I know. The first one's great. I love the first one.
What makes him different and special?
I don't know. I think he's just very marketable because he's adorable.
Okay. But he's kind of cheeky and fun.
Yeah.
He's an alien, right?
Yes. Yeah. He's a little alien dude and he's hugely popular with kids. Like you look everywhere, you'll find Stitch merch no matter where you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a dog outfit for Shaniqua that's Stitch. Cannot even tell you. I can't even remember if I've seen the movie.
Okay. It's really good. Yeah. The original is very, very sweet. I have no idea what the remake is like.
I was about to say, do we know whether this live action remake is just a copy of
Probably. Yeah. All the other ones are, at least.
It is the same storyboards.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, the How to Train Your Dragon is on its way.
Yes.
And it is very much a lot of the beats are the same.
Yeah. That looks like a almost shot-for-shot remake.
Somewhat, but I mean, it's got... Yeah, I think it's just that original was quite a long time ago that we kind of forget it. But I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
I liked the live-action remake.
And have you seen it already?
We got given this like unprecedentedly early screening as exhibitors.
Right.
So yeah, that was cool.
Okay.
I liked it.
Cool.
Because it was done by the same guy.
Yeah, it's the same director.
And I think that makes somewhat of a difference.
Okay.
Same director as the animation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, he did all three of the animated movies.
Dubois, what's his name?
I can't remember. Dubois. Yeah, it is Dubois. But that movie it's pretty obvious why they're making that movie. Because within like a month of the movie coming out, they're opening at Universal Studios in Florida.
Oh,
they're opening
one.
The How to Train Your Dragon, land, the How to Train Your Dragon area at the thing. So they're basically making this movie. Rather than making a whole other animated movie, which would take a lot more time and a lot more effort, they're just remaking the film, which is a lot easier, essentially as a way of advertising the park.
Okay. Anyway. And making it a bit more real, which is what the park will do.
Yeah.
But it's got such a good fucking message to it.
Mm.
The whole premise of How to Train Your Dragon, for those who need a reminder, is like they think the dragons are bad and evil and we must kill them.
Yeah.
And then when you realize they're not, they can be your friends.
Mm.
It's like, that's a fucking immigrant story.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, because often in the film, they say, like, we've come to where the dragons are.
Yeah.
Like, we're in their land. And that's why they're fucking attacking us. Yeah. It's like, but we could be friends.
Yes.
It's like, it sends a good message to little kids going like, oh, maybe we mustn't just hate something because our parents told us we should hate them.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's kind of why I left that going like, this is a cool one for the bioscope.
Okay, cool.
Not that like it's my job to educate kids.
Yes.
But it's like, I look at the kids' stuff coming out and some of it is just horseshit.
Yeah.
And some of it is really good.
Mm.
And it's like, and it could be this early childhood development. Right. Like, Inside Out 2.
Yes.
So I really want the Bioscope's kids' content to have some kind of fucking smarts to
some
it.
Value to
it's
it.
Yeah, it can't just be explosions.
Yeah.
It's the one kind of animation that Corbin took him a long time to watch because I think he was like scared by the dragons.
Oh, okay.
And like only recently has he been able to like watch them.
Okay.
But yeah.
But maybe I should consider Stitch. I don't know.
I've got one last thing to kind of talk about. Sure. I was looking through the Disney Plus app and I was quite surprised by the top 10 in South Africa.
We're
not really surprised, but okay, number one, Grey's Anatomy.
Cool.
It's literally been number one since the day Disney Plus launched in South Africa. Grey's Anatomy has been number one.
Yeah.
Nonstop.
When we're not watching other things, like Leslie watches Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
That woman is the highest paid actress of all time.
That makes sense.
The lead actress.
Yeah.
Jeez, Ark.
Not just in television.
So I think she's tried to quit and they just keep on giving her more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Modern Family 2.
Yeah.
And then 3, which is something that I have been pushed so relentlessly. I got an email on Star Wars Day and on the email were all the Star Wars movies and stuff and new stuff. And at the bottom, The Secret Life of Mormon Wives.
Yeah.
Who is the show for?
Absolute trash.
Mormons.
Yeah. No, it's juicy as shit. I started watching it and just because I wanted to bring it up on the show and I wanted to tell Perrin about it.
Yes.
Because Perrin, who also works behind the counter here, grew up Mormon.
Yeah.
It's scandalous as shit.
Right.
It's juicy.
But what I found the
most... No, you get to poke fun at religion.
Yeah.
There's a whole sex scandal and the women are these attractive women that are in this kind of Mormon community, which we know very little about.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
But what surprised me the most was Desperate Housewives. Number 8.
Wow.
Like that show ended like 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeez.
The most fascinating thing about Desperate Housewives is how the media spun the interpersonal stories of those women.
Oh.
They made them they grew the tabloid articles about how they were fighting and there was infighting.
Right.
So much of that was manufactured.
Jeez.
It was very interesting.
Yeah.
And then number 10 was the preview for the new Lilo and Stitch movie, which is like, okay.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Shit. Cool. Any other ones?
No, I think
okay.
I'm
Can we
spent.
We've got someone coming. Okay, we've got to do some work.
Hey guys, Marcus here, returning sinners. I'll keep this short and sweet. Everyone has to go watch it either way if you haven't. There's many things that I liked about this movie, but at its core is that it's not generic or derivative or remake or sequel. It's original. It's its own thing, which I think these days really goes a long way. And it's more than you can ask for. More than that, it doesn't stick to the rules. It's completely genre bending. Yes, it's a horror film, but it's also kind of a crime and gangster film. and a bluesy musical, of course. So yeah, blues driven for sure, but it goes way beyond that in many, sometimes unexpected, but great directions with the music. Really enjoyed that. And yeah, so many different things at once. There are scares, it's funny at times, it's sexual, it's thrilling, but overall, it's just entertaining and a good time. And yeah, don't even get me started on the soundtrack. I've been hooked ever since. Some real amazing tracks on there. So yeah, if you haven't watched it, go watch it, and don't forget to wait for the post-credit scenes.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. We love getting the returns.
Yeah.
Just know that you always can. There's a little paragraph description at the bottom of this episode where you can see how you can send one of those. I completely agree. We've spoken about Sinners at length. I think very interestingly, Sinners is just coming to its end cinematically.
Okay.
Because I've started seeing in our little cinematically. I've started seeing the announcement of like when it's going to start streaming.
Okay.
And it's always interesting when a film kind of just naturally hits that end.
Yeah.
And because they're quite desperate to have a whole new audience watch it.
Yeah.
I think of my sister who now was like, "Oh, I watched Complete Unknown," and you're like, "Oh, right. Yeah, welcome to the fucking party," because she's, you know, working and has two kids. She can't always go and watch these movies. Getty, you famously didn't like Sinners. Why?
I get so confused when I'm like, I'm so positive, everyone has the same feeling, and I'm like sitting there seething, and then people start clapping, which never happens in a movie.
Well, I agree with Stefan for all these reasons,
and
I really enjoyed it. So, like, what was at the crux of what you didn't like?
I couldn't identify with a single character. The main problem for me was that
you weren't like a 1930s black gangster.
No. Well, look, he played these twin characters, and like throughout the entire movie, like I didn't know which was which. And to me, that is a huge problem.
Yeah, I must say, I also got a little confused at times when my first watch. I saw it as an exhibitor, and then I came and watched the premiere with you guys. They were perhaps a little too similar, but that's what twins are. So I don't think that that's, I don't think they had to be radically different.
Right.
Okay, but carry on.
And also like the characters, and like they brought in these different people, and there was like this implicit history between them. And I didn't buy anything. It just felt very much, oh, we need to make a movie. I didn't feel any.
So you just lost a little bit of rooting in emotion.
Right? Yeah, look, I mean, technically it was cool. I didn't think it was a horror at all. Like, there wasn't anything scary. I just think, Stefan mentioned in the thing that it was like all these different genres, but I just don't think they nailed any of them. And it was...
No, like your opinion is valid.
Sometimes it works to have a mishmash of genres. Like in the movie that I want to mention a bit later is just bonkers in terms of genre meshing.
Yeah, I think there's something cool about that. Like, we're seeing so much of that in culture, especially music, where I think there is an argument that we are now in a completely genre-fluid music world. Where I don't think it's dominated by like hip hop, whatever. Today's top 20 is all completely genreless.
Right.
Movies might be the same to some degree. But I think I must say, I thought its strength was the fact that it rooted you in this like very period specific, almost like Oscar looking drama.
Right, yes.
That then became this popcorn movie.
Yeah.
And they then just injected it with something interesting and different to take it home.
Yes.
I thought that was an injection of excitement for me.
Look, don't get me wrong. I like going to every movie just hoping that this is going to be the best movie I've ever seen.
No, and that is a good stance. And that is something I really love about all of us in the video store, is that we're not out to be pretentious pricks. We want to enjoy movies.
Yes.
Especially someone like Perrin. I just love him. I love how he loves movies.
Yeah.
But I was just rolling my eyes the entire movie.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No, that's interesting that you came in a funny way. I must say it hit my frequency, that idea of like this kind of mysticism and just how music can unlock this passage of time. Mm. And like, I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was so wildly unique.
Yeah. But I think that like, it's perspective there that's interesting. Like you said, the first thing you said in terms of criticism was you couldn't relate to any of the characters. Whereas that's not something I look for in movies at all, just saying from like a personal perspective. Yeah. I don't need to like relate to the characters. It's just like whether or not the movie interests me in them. Like how does the movie invest you in this character?
Yeah.
And I was like immediately invested in Smokestack because I think the performance is so good.
Yeah. I don't know if relate.
I was like, cool, I like these guys.
I don't know if relate is the right word, but right. I just need to be able to just identify, empathize. Like, can I look at this character or can I see this character and what they've shown us in the movie and do I understand why they're doing the things they're doing? Are they justified?
Right.
Because a lot of times I think you shouldn't relate to characters, especially like bad guys, who they are.
Yeah. Well, the most successful villains in these kind of big world-ending movies, like if they've really done a good villain,
yeah,
a villain is one where you're like, I kind of see your point.
Yes,
it's like you're a bad guy. Yeah. Clearly, let's not fucking kill hundreds of thousands of people, but you're making a good point. Like that's a really good villain today.
Yeah.
Because 20 years ago, 30 years ago, your Bond villains are like just evil dudes.
Yes,
and you're like, okay, but now like a good one, like a Thanos. You know, well-structured villain. It's yeah. Like, yeah, I kind of get where you're coming from.
Yes.
But it's not the right way to do it.
Mm.
But speaking of empathizing
yeah.
and sort of an emotional connection to a movie, I'd love to tell you guys about Life of Chuck.
Cool.
Do you know anything about this movie?
Not much. I've seen the trailer, okay. But
so I'm assuming it's a combination of Life of Pi and Chucky.
No.
Okay. Way off.
Yeah, way, way, way off. Okay, Life of Chuck is coming to cinemas around the world, including the Bioscope, including South Africa, in the first weekend of June. So that's the 6th of June. And it's a neon film, as we've said. It is based off a Stephen King short story.
Okay.
Okay. But let's not forget that Stephen King also wrote Shawshank Redemption. Mm. He also,
it's not from that same collection, is it?
So what it is it's actually, it's a recently published collection. It's called If It Bleeds. Let It Bleed? If It Bleeds.
Okay.
Shit. Can someone check that?
Sure.
If It Bleeds. And that came out in COVID.
Okay.
So it's relatively new in that sense. And he immediately shopped it out and got this film made.
Okay. If It Bleeds.
Yeah.
If It Bleeds. It stars, speaking of old Avengers and Thanos, it stars
Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki.
Yeah.
And what it is... It's a very fucking hard movie to explain, but right. it is so incredible and heartwarming and life-affirming.
Okay.
It's the story of this guy called Chuck, and it is told in three parts, and you are given the third part first. So it goes back in time.
Okay.
And I don't want to give much away, but it starts with basically the world ending.
Right.
So like the first thing to go is the Wi-Fi. Then it's the TV channels, and okay. then it's the like phone reception, and it's this like strange, slow, unsettling end of the world.
Okay.
But in a like a weird, undramatic way.
Right.
Where chaos is happening, mm. where all of a sudden, you know, there'll just be traffic jams, and what's the point, and why would we even go to school, and,
yeah.
and why would we teach and class and go to work, and it's this like... The world comes to an end, but while it's coming to an end, there are these adverts that are thanking some guy called Chuck
yeah.
for his 39 years of service.
Okay.
And so the characters in this part, this third part, which you get seen first, are like having to come to terms with the fact that the world's going to end, but like, who the fuck is this Chuck guy?
Right.
And it's this lovely, big, bold idea that only someone like Stephen King could have.
Right.
Because you get the sense, and I haven't heard too much, but from one or two interviews with him, you get the sense that Stephen King almost starts with this like big, bold idea.
Mm.
Like there's this great thing that has floated around the internet, which was an interview with Conan O'Brien, where he was like, have you ever had an idea that you couldn't finish, yes, or a book that you started that you couldn't finish. And he was like, I had this great idea of like an airport bathroom where a couple are on their way to the gate and she says, I just need to go to the bathroom quick. And he waits outside the bathroom and she never comes out. And then he starts sort of getting annoyed. Someone else goes in and they don't come out.
Right.
Till eventually authorities go in and nobody comes out. And he said, I just couldn't finish it because I never knew where it was going to go.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I just had this lovely idea of this airport bathroom, like something completely innocuous.
Yes.
Just being this like scary fucking place where it's like, what is happening? But he couldn't find a
way
out.
Was this Stephen King?
This was Stephen King in an interview going with like, Conan O'Brien. I couldn't figure this out.
Right.
So you get the sense that he has these like big, wild premises and ideas. You then go for another chapter, which is more the life and the childhood of this character, Chuck.
Yeah.
There's this incredible moment where there's a drummer who's busking in a town square. So it's just drums. And Chuck walks past, puts down his briefcase, and starts dancing.
Right.
And there's this incredible dance sequence where he's like dancing to this woman drumming. And I like got fucking gooey. Yeah. I got gooey from this moment. And the whole movie is about, and this is the last kind of thing I guess I could say about it. This whole movie is about appreciating life and like stopping to smell the roses and like what it means to be alive.
Mm.
It's a great movie.
Okay.
And then you sort of, once you've finished the parts, this third part that you saw first kind of makes sense. And I have a theory about what that was.
Right.
And what was actually like happening there. And I don't want to obviously talk about it now.
Yeah.
But it's just beautiful.
Nice.
And it's special. And it's unlike kind of anything you've seen. And so I really am excited for Life of Chuck.
It's Mike Flanagan.
Yes.
That's interesting.
See the director.
So yes. He's a horror director.
He's typically a horror
and
director.
And this is the you know, when I get given a whole wad of information to sell a movie, often you get these like 10-page fucking director's statements and backgrounds on the actors. And I go, who the fuck? You can't use this.
Yes.
You need three sentences to sell this movie.
Yeah.
Like, what's the best way to phrase this?
Yeah.
So I picked that log line, which is like, you know, the story of a guy's life told in three parts, life-affirming, Stephen King.
Right.
Two or three sentences. But I included a paragraph from the director statement, which is that both he, Mike Flanagan, and Stephen King are known for horror.
Yes.
So they understand the mechanics of horror. Horror is a very mechanical thing.
Mm.
Certain music, certain things, certain build-up, certain things that would be scary.
Yeah.
But both of them realize the success of their horror is if they are rooted in some sense of humanity.
Yeah.
That's what really makes Stephen King different.
Mm.
You know, that's what makes horror really scary is if it taps into something that's like deep inside you.
Yeah.
And what it means to be fucking alive. It's not just scary shit popping around the corner. We can all kind of do that.
Mm.
And so this is this beautiful challenge for both this writer and this director to actually make something different.
Yes.
And it's got one or two like little sprinkles of horror, like tiny little scary moments where you actually like are like, oh, fuck. But it's not a horror by any means.
Okay.
It's like a little bit of a sci-fi. It's cool. Almost somewhat of a fantasy.
Okay.
But I really fucking loved it. I really enjoyed last week.
Nice.
I got to see Life of Chuck.
Yes.
And I can't get into it too much, but I managed to see F1.
Yeah.
I saw F1 in the exhibitor screening.
Cool.
And I left that quite excited about life. I can't get into too much. But it was one of those like weeks where I was like, this is like cinema is cool. Like cinema's safe. At least for me.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill's in it.
Yeah, so Mark Hamill plays his dad.
Cool.
Well, it's effectively like his grandfather that has to raise him.
Okay.
And he's great in it.
Nice.
There's a little bit of this kind of Big Fish where you're like, you don't quite know what's real and not real.
All right.
This kind of look to the future. But it's all about like dancing in the kitchen and stopping to smell the roses and all these kind of themes that I like really identify with.
Yes.
And it tapped into like my sensibility.
Okay.
So, almost seems like it's kind of on the same level as Walter Mitty. Did you ever watch
yes.
that?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's got that sentiment, which is like, what does it mean to be alive?
Yes.
And you...
That's a movie that should have been so much huger than it was.
Yeah.
I really loved Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's just got that lovely like payoff at the end. Mm. It's smart. It's you know, I like that. It's that, what does it mean to be a fucking human?
Yes.
And we all need those reminders every now and again.
Yeah.
So that's The Life of Chuck.
Nice.
Which will be in cinemas soon.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
I watched a very strange, lovely movie last night. It is called The Legend of the Oshi.
And Legend of Ochi.
Ochi.
I think it's called Ochi.
O-C-H-I.
Yeah, there's a A24 podcast, and they had the director of that talk to, who was the famous biologist who...
Attenborough?
No.
Oh, Jane Goodall.
Jane Goodall.
Okay.
Jane Goodall and him.
Interesting.
In conversation. Okay. Very interesting.
So this, the director, it's his first feature.
Yeah. Right.
And he's done a few music videos, like a Bjork one.
Oh, that makes sense. It's got Bjorkiness to it.
And so before I tell you what the movie is, this guy, he's co-founded the studio that set up somewhere in America that have a 25-hectare plot. And they're all self-sufficient, everyone who lives on this plot. So they tend the land, they make their own food, and they make movies.
Interesting.
Hmm. It's like such an amazing idea of a community.
There's a few guys out there that have built these little communities. Danny McBride built all his friends. They all moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's where they make a lot of the Righteous Gemstones and all those TV shows. Because they want to escape that, like, craziness and also the expensiveness of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Robert Rodriguez has famously always been in Austin with his studios. Mm. So that's cool. Where did you say this was? You don't know. Somewhere in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
But Legend of Ochi's got almost like a little E.T.-ness to it.
Yeah.
So it's set in a world where they're similar to How to Train Your Dragon, right?
Yeah, it feels like... Okay, so to describe this movie, it's imagine How to Train a Dragon with a script written by David Cronenberg, but directed by Wes Anderson.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's it.
So it's got that feel. It's like, this feels like it's 50 years ago, and then there's like a modern supermarket. So it's like...
Yeah. But even from the trailer, you can tell like there's a fantasticalness to its set design.
Yeah.
Like it's purposefully not trying to look like a real... It looks, it's got a glossiness to it that makes it feel it's contrived.
A beautiful combination of puppetry and special effects. Like this movie was like 2 years in post-production.
Jeez.
Yeah. And you can feel the love. And yeah, it's supposed to be a family movie. I feel like Corbin would get a little bored.
Okay.
Interesting.
But for the first hour, I was just like, this is just so strange. Another reason I watched it was it's an hour and 34 minutes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which to me is like a huge factor. Like,
sure.
I was even after Andor, I watched Rogue, I put on Rogue One, I'm like, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Are you kidding me?
Legend of Ochi is one of those films similar to what we spoke about last week, where it's these great little indie films that are never going to come to South Africa. So they're not going to be in cinemas.
Yeah.
They might creep onto like a on-demand thing at some point.
You can rent it on iTunes, Apple TV,
and
Amazon.
Cool. All right. Well, there we go. We put on our eye patches. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Okay.
But I know that the torrent is out there.
But the use of music and soundtrack in this movie just gave me goosebumps.
Because
the way these things communicate is like this.
But there's this little mountain creature, and our main character is a girl who kind of saves it.
Yeah.
And
it gets separated from its mother, and she goes on like a journey to take it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I even like considered looking at it, I'm like, is that Baby Yoda? And it was special. Yeah.
Yeah, we brought it up ages ago where I saw the trailer. This movie looks amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, it just never made its way to our shores.
Okay.
But yeah, okay. So now it is on demand, which is cool.
Cool.
It's like you look, it had a $10 million budget, which in America is nothing. But then you're like, that's 200 million rand. That's so much money.
But in like filmmaking terms, that's tiny budget.
Yeah, but then you look, it's like 2 years in post-production and then they obviously took their time and...
Wow.
Yeah. But speaking of money and who finances and how films get financed, something I forgot to mention. Last week, I spoke about The Seat, which was the short film about Mickey Antonelli, the race car driver who's now in Formula One. It's a short film. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention the fact that it was funded by WhatsApp.
What?
I forgot to mention this.
Wow.
They're one of the sponsors of Mercedes, Formula One team. And the way in which WhatsApp put their name but didn't put their name on this short film product was real interesting.
Okay.
It's like it's there but it's not there.
Yes.
And then it's there.
It's interesting that it's WhatsApp and not Meta, because Meta owns WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's specifically WhatsApp.
Facebook, also own Instagram.
Because that immediately has you question, how the fuck does WhatsApp make any money?
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just valued.
Yes.
And so somehow from that value, they have income.
Yeah.
And that income can pay for Formula One cars.
No, through, I've got WhatsApp Business and you can run ads through that. Yeah.
Right.
There we go.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Can I talk about some TV shows?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you got anything you're dying to talk about?
Not really. We'll just do Andor when we get to it.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe we do a spoilery one for Andor since it's
Let's go out into the alley.
Yeah, so we don't have to like censor ourselves when talking about it.
Okay, we'll do the alley.
Cool.
For those who are looking for something a little more light, a little more earth travel-y and appreciate-y.
Yeah.
There is a show on Disney Plus called Restaurants at the End of the World. Not to be confused with Douglas the Adams. Netflix show Restaurants on the Edge, which is, by the way, fucking great.
What is the name of the Douglas Adams book? Is it Restaurant at the End of the Universe?
Restaurants at the End of the Universe.
Restaurant at the End of the Universe.
It's okay, one of the Hitchhiker's Guide books.
Restaurants at the End of the World is a National Geographic show, so it's on Disney Plus.
Okay.
There is a very cool, like no one could ever be this cool fucking chef. She's this like attractive, tattooed, cool Asian woman.
Yeah.
Her name is Kristen Kish. And she literally goes to the strangest, most far away restaurants in the world.
Okay.
So like there's one in this like outpost in Norway that people have to take this like crazy ferry to. There's this boat in basically the Amazon rainforest in Brazil.
Right.
There's this one in like fucking some jungle and you can only like trek there to get to this like mountaintop. I want to say it's almost like in like Bali-ish Indonesia. Oh, okay, I forget. Okay. And so you kind of travel the world and you learn a little bit about cooking.
Yeah.
And she's got to like prepare a meal with them. Most of the times, because these things are so far away, they have to forage from what's around them.
Ah, okay.
So it's a cool cooking show. It's a cool travel show.
Yes.
I like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
I think in amongst all this like intense narrative TV shows, which I admit is the golden age of television at the moment.
Yeah.
There is something quite cool about a good old National Geographic cooking show.
Yes.
Where you kind of see the world.
There was a show on, I think it was on Netflix. I think it was called Chef's Table.
Yeah. That's
where they went to like, but these were like very high-end restaurants, but like obscure high-end restaurants. But it was filmed like Game of Thrones. Like it looked unbelievable.
That Chef's Table one is cool. Like each season is a particular kind of food. So there's like, there's the pizza season.
Yeah.
And then now there's like a bread season. Mm. So it's like a whole fucking season on bread.
Yeah.
But no, I've heard that those are really well done.
I really enjoyed it. I only saw the first season of that, but it looks phenomenal.
Restaurants on the Edge was something different. That was a renovation show where there was like a cooking guy who came in. There was like a stylist who came in.
Right.
There was like it was a little bit like Queer Eye, but for restaurants.
Right.
I think they'd rebrand the restaurant.
Yeah, they'd give these guys a chance to sort of like invigorate themselves, and it was usually because they were just in like maybe a touristy or very like season driven place.
Okay.
And they did well and they survived because of that, but they weren't necessarily getting the locals or repeat customers, or they were just getting a bit tired.
Okay.
Like everything, like Queer Eye. It's like you're working real hard, you're trying real hard, but you just don't have the energy to just fucking take it over the line or reinvent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hard thing to do when you're in the marathon. It's a little bit like the Bioscope. It's like something that if I was just something like the seats I was telling you about. The Bioscope has got very weathered, seats with a lot
well-worn
seats. And there is something charming about that, but there's a point where some of these seats are getting a bit too charming. And it's like the very thing that's causing them is the very thing that is stopping me from fucking fixing them because I'm busy.
Yeah.
I'm too busy being a cinema to fix the cinema, which is a terrible irony.
Yeah.
But I have since found a company to do these seat covers.
Cool.
Last week I paid quite a lot of money to get all of the seats recovered, and I'm excited about the fact that that's
happening. Are they doing it here, or do you have to send them in?
No, they're going to come in with the covers and like fit them properly. I just feel good about that. But I just understand how sometimes in these shows you meet these people that like just can't stop what they're doing to change, to reinvigorate. It's
You're keeping them black. I'm excited to see.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same kind of black leather material.
Cool.
So yeah, guys. Anything else that's nice to mention? I think I'm getting old.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm getting old. I'm approaching. I'm staring down the barrel of 40.
Yeah.
A part of us was quite excited to have discovered The Rookie, which everybody fucking knows about.
Yes.
It's harmless.
It's 5 seasons, and I just thought I'd mention, in amongst the nuance and the craziness of something like Andor.
Yes.
Well, the smartness of Andor.
Yeah.
There is something nice about discovering a show like The Rookie on Disney Plus, where you're like, I got 5 seasons of this. I'm cool. It's a pacifier.
Yeah.
I think there's a space for that.
Yeah.
Is that with the guy from Firefly?
Yeah, Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
Is it also on Netflix?
No, it's on Disney Plus.
Disney, yeah.
It's weird. I'm sure.
And it's cool. He's this 40-year-old rookie who joins the LAPD. It's all kind of what fucking rah-rah gun cop show.
Yes.
Where I would be completely fucking traumatized if I went through as much as they did in their first however many weeks of being in the force, where they just get bullets fucking flying at them all the time. But it's charming, and I think my TV output is going to nosedive for the next few weeks as we gently wade through the 5 seasons of The Rookie.
I feel that's something I could watch while I'm working.
Right.
Yeah, it's lovable, and you get to know the characters, and I just think it's interesting to maintain the fact that there is a place for that.
Yeah.
And even in 2025, they make a show like Tracker, which is kind of the same thing. It's episodic. Yeah. Every episode's a new one. This is a guy now hunting down and tracking folks. Also, reliability, lovable characters, nothing too strenuous. And I think in today's world, you need that.
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. As long as I'm not turning too much into my parents. I talked to my dad. He's like, I just like happy characters. I just like happy stories. He's like, I don't like this depressing shit. You gotta just have happy shit. And I'm like, I agree.
If there's lawyers, my dad's watching it.
Oh, right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he loves that shit.
Okay, funny.
But before we talk about Andor, so in the middle of the Andor release schedule, on Star Wars Day, they dropped a show called Star Wars Tales of the Underworld.
So
it's like a mini show. It's done in the same animation style as the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Okay. And they've done like 4 or 5 of these.
They did Tales of the Jedi.
And then Tales of the
Empire, I think.
Tales of the Empire. There's been called 4 of them.
Yeah.
So they're generally 6 episodes and they 10 to 12 minutes each, and it's like 3 episode arcs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in this one, they went back to look at characters from the Clone Wars, Asajj Ventress and Cad Bane. I don't know if you know
love
them.
Love Cad Bane, dude.
His origin story, they're so, so clever, both of them. So Asajj Ventress is this interesting character in the Clone Wars and Star Wars because she is
Dooku's apprentice.
Dooku's apprentice, yeah. Yes. And so she's kind of like this villain.
Yeah.
And then there was a series of episodes that didn't get turned into the show because they canceled it, but they made it into a book. And these three episodes are written by George Lucas's daughter.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And in the episodes, they get one of the Jedis to kind of meet up with the Sarz Ventress and get her to help him assassinate Dooku. It's this whole plot.
Right, okay.
And in it, he ends up falling in love with her.
Right.
And she dies, like, in this book.
Mm.
But then she returns in The Bad Batch, which is another spin-off of The Clone Wars. And they don't really explain how or why.
Okay.
But then in The Tales of the Underworld, they go back and, like, how she comes back. But it's with a condition that she can't see this guy. And it's...
Yes.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. But I love that. And it was just silly and... Tales of the Underworld.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, if you haven't watched Clone Wars, I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of it's not going to make sense. Like, you're not going to give a shit who Cad Bane is.
Yeah.
It all feels quite nuanced.
Yeah.
But I think let's wrap up and close up shop. Then we have ourselves the spoiler alley, which is behind the shop where Gad is going to vape. you don't smoke cigarettes, eh,
no.
Graham? Did you ever smoke cigarettes?
No.
Okay.
Never appealed to me.
Yeah. So it's the smoker's alley, but this is where we can talk some spoilers.
Yeah.
And I think we're due for that with Andor because it's been out and kind of finished for a bit.
Yep.
I'm kind of going to let you guys talk about it because I haven't seen it and I don't care to necessarily watch it.
You should.
No, that comes out wrong.
You raw asshole.
No, I mean, I don't mind hearing the spoilers. Okay, and I think that's cool. That
you'll be fine if you don't watch it.
I might not. It might not get to me.
Yes.
But I heard and understand it's amazing, and I respect, and I think it's amazing. Let there be 100 Andors. So yeah, I think let's wrap up here for that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for a lovely day, guys. Our main homepage is thevideostore.co.za.
Yes.
You can see previous links to previous episodes. But yeah, as we said, there is this way for you to return. Mm. And also, I'm giving a little bit more of a shit about our Facebook group.
Cool.
Because I didn't really understand the mechanics of Facebook. I haven't thought about it in a while. But
yes.
On the Facebook group, you can return. You can do Hey Did You Guys Sees. Cool. And there are some people that are participating in that, which is really cool to see. So let's go.
I did a post about Skeleton Crew just after I'd watched it.
Oh, right.
And then it only got approved like months later.
That was me. Yeah. Like, I'm not good at it because I thought, no shit, I don't want the management of having to approve.
Yes.
And then I realized, so I took all those bans away.
Right.
And then there was this like weird Russian porn that started fucking cropping up on our Facebook group.
Oh my God.
Where they made these like Facebook events under us.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
So I then stopped anyone from doing that. But what I can now do.
Just make us admins.
Is I can approve an individual.
Right.
And so that all your posts going forward will always just be. Pre-approved.
Right.
Well, what I found funny about it being approved so much later, because I was kind of like I was saying, Star Wars can do anything. Like in the moment, I enjoy it.
Yes.
But like after Skeleton Crew had finished, I like instantly forgot it. It was like just one of those shows. I'm like, I can't even remember what happened to Jude Law in the end of that. And then this post came on, and I'm just like, oh, it's great. You must watch it. And I'm just like. Oh, you shouldn't watch it.
All right. But listen, I'm going to leave you to have your chat.
Cool.
But yeah, thanks everyone.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 All right. You guys have a chat.
Cool.
I'll see you guys again soon.
All right.
Okay, like a
bye.
Okay, bye.
Cool. Okay, Graham.
Yo.
So did Andor make Rogue One a better movie?
It actually made it a worse movie for me.
Felt exactly the same.
Because like you said, you watched it right afterwards, right?
No, well, I mean, not right afterwards, a couple of days afterwards.
Yes. It just felt like really shallow to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing I read, there was a book called Catalyst that came out that was kind of like a prequel to Rogue One.
Right.
It mostly focused on Galen Erso.
Okay.
And like his history with Krennic. Right. And it really brought a lot of texture to his character because he of all the characters in Rogue One, yeah. Galen Erso is just like barely in that movie.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's really like fundamentally such an important part mm-hmm. of that story. So that was amazing. And they didn't really touch on Jyn.
Yes.
And then Andor came and really brought such amazing backstory yeah. to this character.
Yes.
So like watching Rogue One, there's a couple of, I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of hits harder. Yes. And then that moment just before they're about to go off in Rogue One mm. and he's giving that whole speech.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, okay. But then, yeah, it's just, everything's just so rushed.
Yes, it's
for
very
rushed. For a 2.5 hour movie,
yeah.
everything is so rushed.
There's too many characters for them to actually do anything with them.
Yeah.
Like and, they don't, we don't learn anything about any of them, and they don't, like, there's no character arcs, you know, they don't grow.
I mean, I could still appreciate Rogue One. It's still, no, is I still my yeah, favorite
I,
movie.
I but, like Rogue One.
But like, but that's how good Andor was.
Andor was so much better, dude.
It's,
I loved it.
You know, like one of the things I love doing, it's not, it's kind of a spoil, but not a spoil. If I'm going to watch something, I'll yeah. go onto IMDb and just see what the ratings are.
Oh, okay, okay.
And like I did it because I watch Andor. We obviously watch it the next day. So there's yes. at least been like 10 hours or so out in America nice. And people have had the chance. And I'm like, how do all three of these episodes, like how they rated like over 9? That's like not possible. So like it gets me like a little revved up.
Yeah.
And the first six, the first two arcs were a bit slow. That first one, that first scene where he gets in that TIE Defender.
Yes.
I'm like, what the fuck is happening? So I don't watch stuff with headphones, but
okay.
because just now, to be a bit more considerate, I would watch stuff at half on him. She's like, why don't you just watch with headphones?
Yes.
And I'm like, I was like a bit hesitant. But yeah. when I watched that first episode of Andor
mm.
and the sound design in that like TIE Defender scene,
yes.
I was like, I'm just watching everything with headphones yeah. now. It just like changed my whole experience. Yes. So that happened. And then the second season, it just kind of trudged along a little bit.
Okay.
But about the second...
Yeah, the second block. Like this. Yeah, it's 4-3 episode arcs.
But by the time that third block happened, you're
see,
like,
dude.
Oh, it all made so much sense. Yeah. All that build up with Mon Mothma yeah. and thank God for YouTube videos and like the explainers and the spoilers.
There's okay. a few.
I don't know if you ever watched the new Rockstars channel.
No,
because they're great. They go scene by scene and talk okay. about the Easter eggs. Because even in Rogue One, they were like. Mentions of stuff and like obviously this ties into that.
Yes.
And then they recently did a relook at Rogue One.
Oh, okay.
Especially tying back into Andor.
Yes.
And you like really get like the full picture and that broke my heart
yeah.
in Rogue One was when Bail's like, I'm going to go back to Alderaan to tell everyone there
yes.
is no chance of peace. It's like, no, Bail, don't. But that was great. How did you feel about Brett as...
I liked him. I thought he did a pretty good job.
Because...
Initially, I didn't even notice it because they do like have a decent enough resemblance.
Yeah.
And then only after a while, I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's a different actor.
Because I specifically remember... I don't remember him... I didn't remember him being in Rogue One, but he was obviously in the prequel trilogy. And he was like not old.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying... Like the talk when Benjamin Bratt was going to be replaced.
Yes.
You're like, Jimmy Smith is old. He's like, no, he's not that old. Yeah. But then in Rogue One, is like, he's old.
Yeah. He is pretty yeah. old.
So, yeah. And I also, I love Rogue One so much. I just, anything touching it. There was a book that came out just before Andor.
Yeah.
That was set around, I think about a year, somewhere, it must have been somewhere around Endor, because the book is basically about Mon Mothma
okay.
and Bail Organa, and Bail Organa's trying to get the Senate to yes. recognize that the Jedi were good, and
okay.
what the Emperor did was a bad thing, and
yes.
he's like gathering all this evidence, and like someone's given him these Jedi archives that have been tampered with.
Right.
So he goes on this mission to see who could tamper with Jedi archives and
okay.
and it gives a bit more of a history of Mon and that guy that like that ends up getting goes in the chauffeur and you don't see him again.
Oh yes.
It gets revealed that when the Empire took her in,
yeah,
to cover up the fact that she's working with the rebels,
mm,
and to justify like why she hasn't been seen in certain places, she says she's having an affair with this guy,
right?
But she's not.
Okay.
And like it gives a lot of subtext to handle the book. I don't even just the audiobook that I read, but it was such a slog.
Oh right.
Like Catalyst was amazing.
Okay.
But this book was just like, I just have to finish it because I have to make use of my Audible free trial. But it was worth it. And
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like, we keep talking about the characters. I think the characters are like the best part in the way they flesh out all the characters in this. It's almost like Andor isn't even the main character.
Yeah.
Like
he wasn't even in one of, I think, episode 7.
One of them, he's literally only in the last scene.
Yeah.
You know. It's that sort of show. But I don't mind that at all because they like managed to like develop them in such a way that makes them all interesting. Like Clea, who's Luthen's like, not even Luthen's, like the whole time you kind of think she's Luthen's assistant. But then we kind of learn like she's almost running the show more than he is.
Yeah.
You know, Luthen is kind of just like the fanatic. And she's the one who actually like makes things happen.
But by the time that she has to like kill Luthen, there's so many mixed feelings because you're like, she's doing it because she loves him, but she's doing it because she hates him.
Yes.
And it's like, oh my God. Yeah. Ah. Like, you don't get cinema like that.
And that actress, that's Andor's literally her first role.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
I think you said so in the last episode.
Like once she started like acting, they started like giving her more and more and more to do because she's so fucking good in this. But I was like, I was saying to Perrin, I think, I'm glad they only did 2 seasons. I think it focuses the story really well. And like Andor's story is over now. But you could take all of these supporting characters and make more stuff with them.
I can't remember if you guys were saying it in the last podcast episode or if I read it somewhere else. But like each 3 episodes of this arc feels like the last 3 episodes of what the seasons might have been.
Oh, right. Yes. So because they originally planned, or at least Disney wanted to do like 5 seasons or something.
So if you look at it like that.
Yes. Each one could be. It makes sense. Yeah. And originally their idea for the show was like a Cassian K2SO like buddy sort of show.
Yeah. And it was going to be like The Mandalorian.
Nah. Yes, exactly. Tony Gilroy was like, you have that show already.
Yeah.
Let's do something else.
Well, I don't think they'd quite made, The Mandalorian hadn't quite come out yet.
Okay.
So I think they might have just taken that concept that they wanted to do for Andor and just turned it into The Mandalorian. But interesting. Thank God for Tony Gilroy.
Yeah, dude, he's incredible. Yeah. But I love the treatments of like those K2 robots. They're fucking terrifying. Because like they don't carry guns or anything. They just walk around and like literally crush people. They're so intimidating.
That scene where he just flung that rebel.
Yes.
The Frenchish lady.
Their original idea, they actually scrapped the episode for like budget reasons to introduce K2SO was going to be, they're going to do a horror episode where it was almost like Alien, where it's like they're on board a ship and K2SO is on board the ship before he's been reprogrammed. And he's like stalking them through the ship, like killing people. And that's how they actually like encountered him. I was like, oh, I would have loved to see that.
Because apparently they had to retcon.
There was a comic book. Yeah. Yes, there was a comic book that did their thing. And Tony Gilroy was like, nah, let's just do our own thing. But like their justification for it was something about their involvement there. They needed to cover up. Like they didn't want people to know they were on Gorman when that happened.
Yeah.
So the comic book is like the version of the story that they tell. It's like the fictional version like they've invented.
Okay.
That's the way they like think about
that's
it.
Fun.
Yeah. But we're kind of going all over the place here, but episode 8, which is the
actual Gorman.
The Gorman Massacre episode. That is one of the best episodes of television I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
No, it's unreal. Like Cyril.
Yes.
In that.
Yes.
Oh, just like all the realizations and. Oh, when they close the gates.
Yes.
Oh, it's just, oh.
Yes,
I've never been like more uncomfortable because you just know what's happening.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh.
And like as he's realizing that like the Empire's used him, Daedra's used him, like it all just like builds up to this like betrayal from him and it's, oh, what a great performance, dude. Oh.
Daedra's, oh,
just, what a great just, character, dude.
I just also loved like her boss.
Yes.
There was that moment when he's like in the room and he's playing back. Is it Fennec?
Oh, okay.
Fennec
yes.
was the guy from the first episode.
Who, yeah.
And his speech, which was obviously being played everywhere, just the whole idea of like a rebellion, you're not in it alone.
Yes.
It's going to take all of us together to make this change.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's like listening to it and he's just in his head, it's just like, you're so fucked.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, you are. Yeah. Oh, I love that. And yeah, it's just, so good, it's just all about hope and those themes. And it's just like,
yes.
Oh, the loss and
yeah,
I can just talk about this show forever.
Yeah, exactly. But like again with Deirdre, the way that character Deirdre, the way her character, like where that goes, and when even she, like despite the fact that in her mind at least she's done everything right for them, they still turn on her in the end.
Yeah,
and like she's a scapegoat essentially, and she winds up exactly where she put Andor.
Yeah,
you know, literally in the exact same place.
Camino, what?
I can't remember what that's called.
To end off, I got a great bit of trivia.
Yeah.
So when Gareth Edwards was like conceptualizing Rogue One,
yes.
I think the I can't remember who the main writer was, but he'd come up with all the planet names.
Oh, right.
And they needed a planet name for where the plans were being held and all of that.
Mm.
And they told Gareth, like, you can come up with this name.
Okay.
So he went out to get a coffee at Starbucks and they asked what his name was. And he said, it's Gareth. And they wrote Scarif on the cup.
Wild.
Yeah. That's where they came up with that name.
That's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
Scarif.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good place to end.
Good place to end.
Yes. Everyone go watch Andor.
Just,
I think it's the best thing Disney Plus has ever made since Disney Plus came into like existence.
Yeah.
It's the best thing they've done.
Like I want to say it's like better than Breaking Bad. I mean, like that's hard. I don't know if it's better than Lost, but yeah, it just left me feeling so glad that I chose to be a Star Wars fan.
I agree. Sick.
Sick.
Bye.
Bye.